I want men to be able to take an honest look at the impact that they're having in their lives. You know, both on themselves. What is the self-talk? What are the stories that they're feeding? What are they kind of enacting out of, you know, where they feel insecure in themselves? You know, where are we holding shame in our bodies? Where are we holding confusion? Or, you know, where do we know we really went wrong in the past? And how do we make amends for those? Like, how do we clean up, you know, where we're starting from right now? Like those little moments in high school, in college, in my adult life, where I didn't show up well, I hurt someone. My actions actually cast a stone of rippling harm through a community. I think that men can start there, of like, how can I own what I know to be true? It's like, how can we embody behavior that is viewing our life force, our erotic charge, our desirous self from a place of reverence, from a place from like in the spirit of beauty? I want to offer myself as a gift.
Today we approach the complex subject of male sexuality and attempt to be a part of crafting a healthy narrative around a topic that is at times controversial, dark, and even demonized. We sit with sociologist and men's work practitioner Elliot Katz and discuss, what is the man box of masculinity and how is it problematic for both individuals and society at large? How do shame, secrecy, blame, and vilification hinder a healthy conversation around male sexuality? What does a healthy relationship with sexuality even look like for boys and men? What are tools like bystander training, consent training, and shame resilience that can help enable that healthy relationship? And finally, what can be unlocked if we can truly heal in this arena? Elliot emphasizes the importance of self-examination, body awareness, emotional literacy, and community support to propel men towards the best versions of themselves. Authentic, responsible, self-aware, and embodying a deep congruence between their inner and outer selves, all of which contribute to an empowering story around male identity that cultivates healthy connection, vitality, and vibrancy.
Welcome everybody back to another episode of Woven Wings Live, where we bring you wisdom and tools for vibrant living. I'm Gabe Crane. I'm joined by my co-host Rahul Deedwania. And if you enjoy listening to us, please share our podcast with a friend or leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also join our newsletter, which is linked in the show description to follow along the journey. Today's episode is, I think, giving us butterflies in our stomach. We are excited to have Elliot Katz here, who is an expert on male sexuality. And the title of this episode today is Light in Dark Places, Healthy Narratives Around Male Sexuality. And I think this continues in a certain way the themes of a podcast episode we had just a few weeks ago with Kawika David Matos around men's work. And I think, you know, being a podcast with two male co-hosts, I think that we sort of, when this topic came up as a possibility, I think we looked at this as something that we felt was important to do, if a little bit scary. But I do think it's a real opportunity today and a pleasure to have Elliot with us. But before we bring Elliot on, I guess, Rahul, how are you feeling about, jumping into this conversation around, male sexuality and everything that's associated with it in today's society?
Yeah, we're looking at each other and smiling, Gabe. I think you acknowledged that, you know, there are definitely some butterflies, right? I think, as we were even thinking about this episode in advance, you know, I feel like there's a degree of vulnerability that's being called upon for all of us, but just speaking personally, like for me, you know, it's a topic I don't feel like I've really talked about, you know, even the word sexuality, to like say that out loud in a personal context, and to go into it and talk about it is kind of new, you know, and I think it's certainly not something my family did. It's not something that we did as a friend circle growing up. You know, we'd maybe talk about it academically or when talking about like art or talking about, you know, shows or movies or that kind of a thing, right? But not really when it comes to talking about ourselves. And so I think as part of that, I'm both nervous, you know, feeling the butterflies that you mentioned, Gabe, but also sort of excited just to like cross into that and to grow into that. And trying to also recognize that, you know, not going to get it right, right? Whatever that means. there's no such thing probably, but just like, hey, this is a step, right? And I think whatever fear there is, whatever shame there is, you know, around this topic, also around this idea that I think we've talked about before of like, hey, we're men, you mentioned, right? We're three men now having this conversation. And there's the part of me that believes that that's really important, you know, that you have that group, you have that ability to share experiences and build off of that commonality as much as there are differences in each of our experiences. But there's also that shame around that, you know, kind of like, hey, have we earned this space to talk about it? And just the rhetoric, right, that comes around this. And I'm sure we'll get into more of that later. But yeah, I think it's all of those feelings all at once. And I think in a way, to me, this episode is pushing the boundary more than any other one on some of these dimensions, just because of the nature of the topic. So yeah, with that, I mean, again, I'm very much looking forward to it, but I'm curious what stuck out there, Gabe, for you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all that. I think those are some really important points. And I think that those are common experiences that people have around this topic in general, when they're thinking about having it, not on a podcast, but, you know, in their everyday lives, in their communities. And I think you brought up a couple important things that I want to touch on. The first is this idea of us as men being here having this conversation, and some of the, I guess, the question or the shame that that brings up, or maybe we should have other identities and people present here. And I think that, you know, there are many different dimensions to this conversation that involve many different participants, you know, with from all sorts of different identity backgrounds. And then at the same time, I think there is an importance sometimes in creating space for conversations between a particular group of people. And in this case, it happens to be us as men. And I think, you know, in our talk back from our conversation we had a couple weeks ago with Kavika, one of the things we felt is that this is awesome. You know, Kavika is amazing, and it was a really special opportunity to get to have him on the show. And, you know, as a precursor to listening to this, it might be a nice idea to go back and listen to that episode, which is about the nature of men's work, which Kavika does on Maui. And I'm involved in that work with him here. But at the same time, we also felt that, you know, this is such a rich and deep topic, and we spend our time talking about all the different elements of what we feel about it, that we didn't really get a chance to drop deeply into any particular aspect of what it is to do men's work or to be a man. And I think this episode is a kind of natural continuation of that, that we do actually have a chance to engage more deeply. And so I think that's important. And at the same time, if you are listening to this, I think it's really important to mention that you do not need to be a man to be getting value from this conversation. I think there might be some particular value if you're listening to this as a man or a young man. You might want to share this conversation, you know, with other men in your life. But at the same time, this is a conversation that's important for everyone. And if you're not a man, I think there's a lot of value to be gained from this conversation as well. And so I think that's important to frame at the outset. With that said, I've got other thoughts, but I think I'm going to share them for the conversation itself. And I'd like to take a moment to introduce our guest, Elliot Katz. So Elliot is based in Sebastopol, California. He has a background in sociology, men's work, and fusion partner dance. And Elliot brings an awareness and attunement to the dynamics of power, consent, and erotic desire that play out on and off the dance floor. He brings passion, vision, and permission to create containers of safety, exploration, and transformation. He's the co-founder of the Pulse Partner Dance Collective in Sebastopol and founder of Showing Up Trustworthy, which is soon launching programming to help cis-hetero men deepen into embodied congruence, attuned allyship, and erotic nobility. And so before we go further, I just want to say, Elliot, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you on the show. We've been friends for a long time, and this is a great chance for us to reconnect. So welcome, and I'll just put it out to you from the beginning, if you could just lay out for us, you know, why are we talking about this today? What is the deal with male sexuality? Why should that be a topic of a podcast episode? And what's the problem that's going on with that and how that's playing out in our society?
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to have this conversation with both of you. Yeah. What an opening first question. I mean, I'll start with, you mentioned men's work and men's circles, and for men that have the privilege of sitting with other men and being in spaces of honesty and transparency, still in those circles, in my experience, and I've been involved in men's circles for, call it 14 years, we still too often skip over our inner erotic and sexual lives. It still remains too often. Maybe some circles really have that honesty and safety for men to share that part of their lives. But even within those sacred containers, it's often still taboo and too stigmatized to really expose the shame that we might have, the confusion, the discomfort. It's a place where we too often are supposed to have it all figured out. It, you know, falls into that man box of masculinity that I'm sure we'll talk about. So most men don't have those spaces. Most men have no place to really expose themselves from their heart, like expose their heart to the places where they are trying to live a fulfilling erotic life. And I think, you know, everyone with a heartbeat wants to have that. And for men, there's a lot going against them. And I'll start by saying that part of the problem is that men are hurting. It feels to me like the start of the issue where, you know, why men are hurting. There's all sorts of individual and, you know, personal family constellation issues, whether it's, you know, big issues of trauma or just ways that boys and men don't feel safe to be full humans. There's, you know, the social conditioning that boys, you know, it starts as really young boys who don't get to have their emotional expression, are either told deliberately or are, you know, symbiotically, you know, see the fact that they are not going to be validated as a man or as respectable or as worthy if you express these characteristics of tenderness, of emotionality, you know, leaning, reaching for closeness. These things are essentially stripped away from boys and young men. And by the time we become, you know, leaning into our sexual lives, looking for erotic connection, our own self-attunement is deeply disturbed. Our connection to our own emotions and our emotional literacy of how we can communicate with partners, how we can bridge a real deep trust and get the healthy consent that we want to have connective and enjoyable experiences with others. These mature human qualities are relegated to anyone that's not a boy or a man. Like, you know, other people get to have those human experiences validated as pure, as sacred, as natural. And men are stripped of that. And that's, to me, what feels like the first abuse that happens. And then from there, from that hurt place, from that constricted, oppressed place, boys and men hurt others. And they hurt others in big ways. And I will say that, you know, the hurt that I just described of kind of systemic, traditional, hegemonic, patriarchal, masculine conditioning is one way that all boys are hurt, all men are conditioned by. And then some, in a large, the numbers are high of boys who experience real trauma, whether it's emotional trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma. These are not small numbers. They're lower than girls do and women are survivors of, victim to. But the numbers are really high. And so that's another piece that's a very essentially a silent epidemic of, you know, childhood sexual assault that boys experience, right? These are layers where then, you know, men grow up and are high school age, college age, adult, and there is rampant experiences of sexual harassment, stalking, sexual abuse, sexual violence. And I've been staring at these numbers. I've been listening to the stories. And, you know, we are in this post-Me Too time where male sexuality has been heavily demonized. Male voices are oftentimes silenced. Men's experiences is oftentimes, you know, for right reason, men's voices are become tiresome in the conversation. You know, there's a big ask for men to listen and for men to lean back and like let the voices of others come through. And I agree with that. And there needs to be a new way, a new story about the way that men are, the way that men believe about their own erotic energy, around their own life force. You know, these are natural energies in our body, and we are conditioned to experience our sexuality with very limited scope of how we are to pursue fulfillment in our lives. And we can talk all about that. But there's a new story that I want men to live into. There's a new ways that we can get into our bodies and experience our bodies from a healthy expression of eroticism and sexuality, and really offer, you know, this preventative education, and how we want to frame the conversation around sexuality and eroticism such that men can go after a fulfilling life in a way that doesn't create more and more harm.
Thank you for that overview, Elliot. And just to make sure I'm tracking, right? I think what I heard is there's this problem, right? And it's kind of become a trope, right? This like hurt people, right? And this idea that where it's starting, or maybe not exactly starting, but part of the origin is that young boys are not given this space, right, to define what that healthy relationship with erotic energy looks like, among other, you know, I'm sure other qualities, right, of being a boy or being a man in society. And the part that I think struck me the most is that even the most sacred spaces, at least that you've experienced anecdotally, don't necessarily create the space to have that conversation. And that was like fascinating to me, right? That, hey, like what we're trying to do here is have that conversation. And you know, we all acknowledge kind of at the beginning, or at least Gabe and I did, that this is an unusual conversation, you know, and both Gabe and I are in circles, right? As coaches, as practitioners that really try to facilitate, you know, self-understanding, self-expression, dialogue, community, you know, around personal growth. And yet still, right, this is some outside of what's clearly within that. And that's striking to me, right? And I think this idea that the hegemonic definition of masculinity, right, is not like a 21st century thing, right? Maybe now we're starting to have this dialogue, but this is a centuries, like millennia old societal dynamic, right? Or societal construct. And yes, there are differences across cultures. And yes, there are, you know, a handful of matriarchal cultures that maybe operate very differently or whatever, but it's by and large, like pretty consistent, you know, or at least, and maybe we have to define what we're talking about here, but it feels like this idea of like the man box of masculinity is an age old problem. And so I'm curious if you can speak to that a little bit, like what is this definition of masculinity that we're circling around right now? How does it harm? How does it lead to that hurt, you know, that we're talking about in a little bit more detail? And then what is that suffering? You know, what is that suffering that flows as a result of all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I'll start by saying, like, I really appreciate the courage that you two are modeling here to welcome me in and have this risky conversation. And yeah, I hear the invitation to be in the conversation, not just talk about it, right? And maybe instead of talking about the man box, I'll share how I experience it. How, you know, these things are striking to me because when I read it in a book or I hear people talk about it, it's like, it's just kind of like describing the water I'm swimming in. It's like, oh yeah, right. That's exactly how I experience the pressures of, you know, being a man, right? When I feel validated and when I don't feel validated. And I'll, you know, something that was striking for me to recognize is, you know, the ways that girls and women are or are not validated they have their own, you know, women box or femininity box that they get to be, you know, the beauty standards are so intense. And, you know, the ways that girls have to, you know, live into these impossible models, you know, those pressures are, I feel like they've been more understood. I feel like the turning towards the way that boys experience a similar but different contortion to fit into certain boxes is less looked at. Now, there was a great movie that came out, documentary called The Mask You Live In a few years ago or a handful of years ago. That was excellent looking at this, and I encourage listeners to go check that out. But there's a deep way that men are, or boys, and to start there, are supposed to live into the ideals of masculinity. And I'll say that one thing that feels unique is that boys are consistently having to be validated. There's like every day you go to school, every day you step on the sports field, in the locker room, in your, you know, whatever club you're in, whatever friend group you're in, there's this seeking of validation, the seeking of respect that seems kind of like a relentless thing. And I don't know why that happens or how that was created, but the proving that you're, you know, strong enough, tough enough, masculine enough, however that's defined, seems to be this relentless game that every time you have to, like, you can be stripped of your masculinity on a dime. You know, if you, for what, you know, you could be the strongest guy in the locker room, you could be respected for your athletic prowess, and then if you want to just be like, you know, expose, hey, I'm having a really tough time, or man, my parents fighting at home is just like so intense for me. I'm struggling there, or I'm having a tough time with my girlfriend, or I'm having a tough time that I don't seem to be, you know, desired by the girls that I'm attracted to. Anything that's vulnerable, you know, you could just be slapped away. You know, it's gruesome the way, you know, I feel boys, I feel I had to kind of keep up this mask. And I'll say, you know, this is, you know, these masks can look like, you know, emotional stoicism. It can look like toughness. It can look like not expressing fear or pain. It can be the kind of do it all on your own and never ask for help story. I feel like that story continues. Men are really not allowed to ask for help. It's a sign of vulnerability. You know, I say these things, you know, they seem, now I'm 38 years old, these seem silly. They seem inhumane, you know, to try to live into these ways. And for me, there was this liberation of, what if I just forgot about that story for a minute and reached out for the help I needed or exposed myself? There's a deep healing that I experience by admitting fault, admitting that I don't know how to do this, admitting that I'm confused, admitting that I'm scared of what I'm about to try. And a lot of my own sense of self-love has come from witnessing my own courage in life, you know, witnessing myself stepping through the fear and doing the thing that I want to do. And for men, so it takes a lot of courage to speak vulnerably and honestly about what's happening in our inner lives, and not just to our partners. You know, a lot of the framing of what I've been looking at as a cis heterosexual man comes from a heterosexual frame. So, you know, I just want to say that all men are not heterosexual. You know, male bodies are not all, you know, identify as men or really feel they fit into this, you know, man box or even had this conditioning. So I hope that this doesn't, this conversation doesn't exclude anyone in this conversation. And it feels particularly powerful for me to be in the work with cis heterosexual men, because there's a lot of support and a lot of change, a lot of humility that's needed for men that identify that way. So I welcome men who identify that way to the table, to the conversation, because we too often kind of pass along in our dominant culture of not needing to be courageous, be humbled, and get vulnerable and risky with ourselves, with other men, or with kind of on a cultural lens. So yeah, those were a lot of words. I answered some of it. There's a lot more around what the man box is, what those pressures are. But you know, it can, I'll say also, there's kind of these caricatures of masculinity, you know, what it means to be powerful. Either you're physically strong, either you're, you know, successful in this sexual conquest with women, or you attain certain power and respect, whether it's you have a lot of money or you're in a position of power. There's others, but you know, those are ways that are like obvious, blunt positions of respect that men are often seeking to get one or all of those pieces to validate themselves. And this validation, this like brick building, is in my experience, you know, made of straw. You know, it just gets blown away so easily. And a solid foundation of self-respect comes from different behaviors and different accomplishments.
Thanks, Elliot. Yeah, there's like three or four different threads and questions that like simultaneously want to go down. And I think I'm going to borrow a page from Rahul's book, who often does this. So just ask, like, he's like, okay, well, there's these threads and I'm going to ask this one and that one. And then you just respond to whatever feels right for you. But you know, what you're sharing so far is really pinging a number of elements. The first being this juxtaposition that what you just shared, that cis hetero men need support. You know, this is the group that is the privileged group. You know, you mentioned the Me Too movement earlier. This is the group that is the problem. This is who is creating abuse in the world. You know, this is also, you know, if we start expanding it out, this is what this is the group that's created industrialization, created capitalism, you know, is leading the exploitation and destruction of the world. They are the problem. They're the devil. And here I'm hearing you say something the exact opposite, which is that they need support. So actually, they're human. This is obvious, right? But it's something that I think in as you said, a lot of the understandable and necessary elements of the conversation that are happening in our society, this component is often going missing. So I'm curious if you can comment about that. That's one of my questions, Ron. What sort of support do they need? I think just a couple comments maybe to color that in, and maybe that did focus my question there. But, you know, just thinking about these, you know, locker rooms, and of course, locker rooms will always be famous from 2016 forward, right? It was just like, we're having locker room talk right now, right? And that is, this is not the kind of conversation that happened, at least in my locker rooms when I was a teenage boy. And you mentioned that silence that takes place around that time, just when all of the hormones of puberty, all of this introduction to the sexualization of our society and the world starts to flow in. And then this silence around the processing, you know, and within that, the entry of these darker and insidious forces and impulses, influences, you know, that kind of take this natural life force energy, this innate natural power of what it is to be alive, and turn it to something darker and eventually in some cases violent and problematic. And so that's something sticking out to me. And then lastly, that a lot of these characteristics that you named of these invulnerable men, what, you know, which they're not over there. I'll count myself amongst them, right? That we come to embody around being emotionally distant or being strong, being powerful. These are actually characteristics that then end up becoming celebrated by our society, right? So on the one hand, we're, you know, kind of talking out of both ends of our mouth as a culture. It's like, on the one hand, we're vilifying and demonizing, you know, sexually violent men. But at the same time, we are celebrating these character traits that go hand in hand with those qualities, right? You mentioned, you know, for women, people who are female identified, it's, I think there's a similar dynamic with beauty. You know, we all talk about how it's, you know, this terrible thing. Barbie movie is out right now, you know, offering that commentary on that we should, you know, it's not what that's all about. This is a terrible thing. But then we totally celebrate beautiful women and marginalize women that we don't think are as attractive. And so I think there's a similar dynamic going on here. And so, I guess that most of that's color. I want to come back to, you know, so what is the support that cis hetero men need? You know, what do they need to hear? What do we need to be telling to one another as men? What do we need to be, you know, working to put into practice ourselves to change this dynamic and narrative?
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. And I'll be in the question with you, because, you know, my work is asking that question time and time again, you know, with each encounter, each man. I have some ideas. And I'll say first off that men need a space to be with other men. We need to take some of the pressure off of our partners or our mothers or, you know, women in our lives. We need to be learning in spaces of men for lots of reasons, both to receive attention and support from men, but also be in service and be giving our reflections and being in a space of transparency. It is liberating space. Okay, there's like a landscape here of what support men need, because there's you know, personal work we're talking about, you know, some need, maybe all humans, but, you know, many men need, you know, therapeutic support, need a therapist, need, you know, somatic embodiment, or, you know, work, need to get over, you know, major traumatic things that have happened in our lives. And I invite any man to really take that on for themselves in their lives. It's going to just, you know, it's going to breed new kind of liberatory opportunities, more options of how you can be. I'll say two different things that happens. One is, you know, there's a lot of like what men shouldn't do. Like, stop it. You know, stop, you know, allowing, you know, there's a thing called bystander training where it's, you know, it's happening on college campuses. If you're seeing your friends, you know, start to harass a woman or, God forbid, actually engage in sexual assault, to step in. How do you do that in a way? It takes a lot of courage up against the like bros before hoes culture. You know, I say this like almost like air quoting, but it's like there's something that I feel pain in my body when I say this, you know, like these are really gruesome normalcies that are like in boy culture, right? So gosh, you know, what a low bar it is to reach out to your friend who's harassing or abusing his girlfriend, or, you know, a girl that he's approaching that evening or whatever, and saying, hey, something's off here. You're missing something. I don't like what's happening. Doesn't feel right. Can we talk about it? You know, so there's bystander training of like, what could you do to intervene in a situation, to be an ally to the person that feels like they're at the whim of aggressive or hostile behavior. You know, that's but right up against just basic consent training of, you know, what does consent mean? What does it look like? How can it, you know, there's a learning of how to get beyond the awkwardness of it and how it can be actually a very enjoyable thing to receive yeses, and then how to really gracefully receive a no. And that's like, I will double down on that practice every day. Like, how can I share a desire that I have? And if that's not reciprocated, how can I really respect and honor that person for their no? You know, that's like deeply healing as a man to know how to do that well. And that's right up against of what I would call shame resilience. You know, when we are told that we're doing something wrong or doesn't feel right, or, hey, that's a, you know, interesting invitation, how about we do something else, or here's another idea, or just flat out, I'm, you know, no thanks, not interested, please move on. Whatever the no looked like, to really be, you know, how does a man take that on? You know, what's happening in our body when that happens? And I will time and time again come back to, this is a, you know, this life is contained within an organism called our body. And all of our emotional experiences, all of the, you know, the shame, the trauma, the joy, the pleasure, this is contained within our bodies. And the better that we're more familiar with and are able to what's the word? Like like emotionally feel emotional resilience in balancing ourselves when we're struck by, a no or shame or, you know, our own inner self-talk. There's, you know, that leads right into a world of emotional literacy that I spoke about earlier, where boys are not offered the ongoing daily practice of recognizing our emotional experience, being able to name that, speak to that in a way that feels clear, congruent, and also is received by the other in a way that can, I honor your experience. I can, you know, I really hear you. I trust you. What, you know, what support do you need right now? So having spaces where men can build up their emotional literacy and be able to express in a way that feels true and trustworthy for whoever is receiving that. That's a type of support that boys and men need. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, it's touching on, I mentioned the body. This is embodiment practices. So I'm coming from a world where I facilitate and organize partner dances and partner dance events. And it's such a deep practice of consent, intimacy, connection, attunement. And the more that boys can be in not just in their bodies, you know, because most of the times when, you know, the type of connection that men get is either playing a sport or having sex. And too much of men's actual biological need for connection and touch and nurturance is relegated to sexual experiences. And we need to start to build into our lives opportunities for those human needs to be nurtured, to be fulfilled outside of just, you know, an erotic moment of sex or penetrative sex, or, you know, we need to spread out the ways that men can be really seen as, you know, human and have those human needs met. So that's a whole other conversation that, you know, we can talk about, but those are some of the landscape that feels important for men.
Yeah, and I know, Elliot, you just said, hey, that's a whole other conversation, but I think what I just heard in there is what the real need is for this male character that we're talking about, right? It's connection, it's feeling loved, it's being able to express love or express affection, right? And having a context or an environment that supports all of that is what I was just hearing there. And it's interesting, like I was sharing with Gabe before this conversation, I was like, yeah, even something like giving a hug, right? Which is to me, my knee-jerk reaction is, oh, that's so innocuous, right? It's just a simple, you know, like a sharing of warmth and affection between two people, you know, but I'm like, actually, you know, it's sometimes not that simple, right? And is it okay? Is it, you know, what are the circumstances in which the other person is willing to accept that? Will it get misinterpreted? Is it, you know, going to set off a reaction? Am I going to get vilified for it? You know, these are all also built in. And I think, often, you know, the judgment around whether or not something like a hug or anything more than that is appropriate is left to intuition, right? That judgment is, and if you're generally more socially adept and in tune with these things, you might be by and large, you know, able to navigate that better than others. But that's what I loved actually about what you threw out there as these three things, right? The bystander training, the consent training, shame resilience, you know, sort of as a curriculum to build vocabulary around emotional literacy and to have a toolkit around it and to have models of what good looks like. And I think all of that is so powerful. And then the other thing I was feeling as you were talking about all that, right? And talking about having spaces was just even thinking about like my friend circle, right? And some of the, you mentioned like bros before hoes, right? I'm like, man, the number of times I heard that, right, back in the day, and didn't just hear it, but, you know, I'll say like chanted it, right? Almost like represented that energy. And, and trying to put myself in my body, you mentioned embodiment way back when, there was a part of me then that didn't feel completely connected to that, you know, and yet, and this is, I guess, the power of culture, right? Or the power of environment or the power of the box that we were talking about, right? And yet I would lean into that, right? I would lean into that because it was the path. It was the path to being viewed a certain way, to having a certain amount of validation. And I don't know that I've ever really said that out loud, right? That, hey, like I have done things to be validated, or I have presented myself in a certain way to be perceived as attractive or to attract, you know, like females that I was around, or to be, viewed even by my male friends in a certain light, right? I remember years ago, there was this conversation between our friends of like, who's the toughest, right? And I remember within myself, subtly jockeying to be considered, right, among the group as one of the tougher people, right? And it's like, it's super interesting. It's like, man, like, you know, and I think what this conversation is prompting for me is just examining the tie between actions, between posturing, between even thoughts that I've had, and this desire to be validated, or this erotic energy, this desire to be loved, to be viewed as attractive. And I imagine that list, you know, of these ties is endless, right? Is like, it's probably almost everything, you know, like, I think that's why that maybe this topic is so fascinating, right? Is, and in particular, tying it back to sexuality, in particular, tying it back to eroticism, right? Which is this force that, you know, I don't even know how to talk about, but I'm like, just right now, there's this flood of moments that's cycling through my mind of like, okay, yeah, let me just be honest with myself that I approached a situation in a particular way because I wanted to be viewed a certain way. And because in particular, from a sexuality standpoint, I wanted to be viewed as attractive, and I wanted there to be some fruition of that, right? Whether it was someone looking at me a certain way, whether it was someone saying something, whether it was, having some sort of physical intimacy, right? And that's something that I'm just thinking, I'm like, my group of guy friends, like, we never talk about that. You know, it only comes out in the most traditional, you know, locker room talk versions, right? And I can only imagine what that's leaving on the table, right? Because it's leading it to be an invisible force in the way that I act, rather than a force that I've actually looked at, I've examined, I've chosen, to channel in a certain way, and I've chosen to bring my own values into the mix with it, right? How can I integrate respect? How can I integrate humility? How can I integrate compassion and love, not conquest, not, you know, whatever, not that, you know, heightening of self, but actual togetherness. And, you know, I even wish this was building towards a question, but I think this is just, you know, I was feeling this flood of thoughts and memories and feelings. You know, you spoke of embodiment. I felt my body actually get a little bit lighter, just like noticing these things. But then also kind of just this inquiry, I think, popped up of like, man, what are the things that I wish I had done differently that were tied to this unexamined force?
First of all, I just appreciate you sharing, Rahul, and like, it's personally resonant. I think most guys who have been in American college or had a group of guy friends who played sports or things like that are probably going to be able to relate to the series of experiences you just shared. And what it brought up for me is actually clarifying this question is kind of bumping around inside me for a minute, which is that, again, with that, that celebration of those traditional traits that we have in our society, I think that we get left with a contradiction or a contrast that we're faced with as men, where, okay, if I start to question or open up and be vulnerable around some of those dynamics, where the heck does it leave me? It starts to unravel a lot of things. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have acted that way, right? But what is the alternative exactly? One of the thoughts that popped into my head, to be transparent, as you were sharing that, you know, around this phrase, bros before hoes, obviously there's a derogatory component of that phrase, which is messed up. But then there's this also, it made me think about life stages and life cycles, and that there is this phase in life of bachelorhood where you are kind of with your brothers, so to speak, you know, in a traditional sense. There's some truth in this statement around, like, center around your brothers, your friends, your male friends. Don't get caught up in chasing after a romantic partnership, you know, to kind of try to take out like the, or not even just a romantic partnership, but like sex with a woman, you know, to be more vulgar. But, you know, so there is some actually like element of like natural human life embedded in that statement. I was just thinking about a famous anthropological academic paper I read in graduate school once about an indigenous tribe using ayahuasca. And in that usage, which takes place in this traditional maloca or the ceremonial hut, there are like these particular gender roles that each of the parties are playing. First of all, only the men are drinking ayahuasca. Secondly, the women are in the room with them, egging them on, and at least the way the article describes it, egging them on, kind of baiting them with some of their cultural version of some of the stuff we're talking about here, saying that, you know, keep drinking more, you're too chicken shit to not drink, what are you scared, you know, like go do it. And that somehow there's also this power or importance to that. I mean, I think we often, you know, venerate or kind of romanticize indigenous cultures as this kind of wellspring of knowledge or wisdom or how things are naturally should have been. But, you know, in this case, I think you'd see that, yeah, right, there are gender roles. There are things that maybe if we were being emotionally vulnerable, you know, some of those men are probably scared shitless sitting there, excuse my language, you know, like sitting there and drinking this drink that's going to totally flip their lid and feeling pressured as a man to drink it. And somehow there's some value or power in that. And so what it brought up for me is this question. I've heard that shared when I talked with Kavika, you know, around men's work. Something about why I like working with Kavika is because something feels very rootsy and male about the experience. So there's something about this kind of the better part of these male characteristics. There's a sense of solidity, a sense of power. And I won't name names, but, you know, he juxtaposed that at one point. We're having a conversation with a group that reached out to him to do some work. I won't get into all the details, but that this group was kind of more from the like new age human potential kind of world, you know, of men that are probably more on the scale of opening up about their feelings, of probably pursuing alternative structures to how they're structuring their life, you know, in terms of what it means to be in their partnerships, how they envision themselves as husbands, or if they, you know, and fathers. And this tension that I heard so clearly and personally resonated with inside, between these kind of polarities of like, okay, here's this kind of more traditional way that has some power. And then there is like all these like new ideas, which are kind of, again, like from maybe looking at it more from this traditional lens, my viewpoint of like, they're kind of weird. They lead people into like, they lead people astray, or like, yes, it's good to open up about your feelings, but at a certain point, it can become kind of overindulgent, or it's like, it's just becomes whining, or you're not doing something positive with it. And I think that if any man who's interested in engaging in men's work is going to encounter this in some way. So I guess I'm curious, Elliot, if you have what your experience is with that, and if you have any comments about that, that could kind of help us orient as men, like, you know, like is the, you know, anything, I guess, going to its extremes can represent issues and challenges. And so how do you respond to people who might say that certain forms of men's work maybe are also missing the point? You know, it's like, it took everything you just said, or okay, great, let's get more emotionally aware, let's talk about our feelings, mm-hmm. and are somehow still bypassing the situation or taking us somewhere that isn't helpful.
Awesome. Yeah, so what comes up for me is how I've been thinking about this recently is I don't want any of the things that I'm working towards or the messages that I'm offering is to take out, you know, the one mask of masculinity and put on a new one. And for me, it's around truth. And for men to give themselves the opportunity to learn who they authentically are. And what I mean by that is, what are you actually feeling right now? I hear you on the self-indulgence and the over-processing and the, let me just live in the emotional field and, you know, and continue to kind of regurgitate, you know, this over-processing experience. For me, there's been too much repression for men in their emotional lives. So there's an importance of, for men to recover the capacity to feel and to know how to identify that. What that allows them is opportunities to choose wisely and discern, you know, offer discernment to how they share themselves in a truthful way. What that comes off, how that comes off is trustable. If you can name how you're feeling, hey, I'm really turned on right now, or I'm really excited right now, or I'm, you know, I have this desire, to know what you want, know how you feel, be able to communicate that, that's trustable. Both for yourself, like just to be able to recognize there's emotions that men are so pressured to not experience, not express, that they don't even have the feeling anymore. You know, there's deep emotional repression that's happening. And there's just ways that we just know that if we were to share that way or express ourselves, embody that kind of emotion, like it's risky. We're taking a risk, both from either men or peers or women. And so for me, it's not about overdoing it. We've just been underdoing it way too far. So for me, it's about pursuing truth and be able to speak honestly about what's going on for you. You know, that authenticity, I'll say, you know, authenticity begets authenticity. It feels relieving. It feels courageous to speak honestly. I'll just say, you know, if there was just a blanketed way that men behave, it's dishonestly. We lie and we lie and then we lie about our lies and we are just picking up the pieces. And it was years ago, you know, I've had some friends who I've kind of discovered were chronically lying to me and to others. At some point, I don't know if it was, you know, at the end of my, you know, years of high school, I think it was probably the end of high school or maybe the beginning of college. I just put a stick in the ground. I was like, I'm just going to stop lying. Like as much as I can, like, you know, if it's a situation of life and death, it's a different kind of thing. But in my life, I'm going to stop lying. And life becomes riskier, you know, but it becomes lighter. Like there's more buoyancy when I'm not tracking all the lies I laid down and make sure that the next thing I say isn't going to bounce off and cross over, cross wires and get myself stuck. And this person knows me as this way, but this person, it's like, holy hell, that's a lot of energy in a game of inauthenticity, you know? So when we can cut our, like, just say we're not going to be dishonest in our life. We want to walk a path of truth. And that's not always simple. I'll say that's simple. It's not always easy. For us to be in the practice of that and have the risky conversations that need to be had, to share. I mean, for me, when I was growing up, I didn't have any girlfriends in high school. I was really hungry for sexual experiences in high school. And I was terrified of being rejected. I was terrifying of letting someone know that I had a crush on them or I was attracted to them or I wanted to be close with them. I had no way, there was no vocabulary that fit in my mouth such that I could express that in a way that felt like lovely, like to share my delight, to share my interest in a way that feels that I'm not like hitting on them or, you know, like just out for, to like get some, you know, it was, you know, now we're talking like body count. It's like, you know, we're in a pretty shitty place to be, you know, this level of objectification around sexual conquest. But it's also inauthentic to deny the fact that I wanted to have sex. I wanted to have sexual contact. I wanted to have experiences. And so for me, it's like, how do we teach boys to be vulnerable, to be honest? That honesty comes across as trustworthy. There's a safety in just actually for women to feel men where they're at, to hear them speak clearly and have that congruence about how they're acting, how they, you know, the feeling they have in their body and what they're saying. And a woman can really trust that, can really sense, like if you're saying something and you're not in congruence with what's real, like that's like the creepy vibe. Like I don't actually fully believe what I'm hearing. And I have to like be in this whole game of discernment of what's real here, right? I also am like, I want to be a champion for men to have like as much sexually fulfilling experiences as they want. You know, I do not want a bunch of men hiding their sexual charge. That's actually the reason I'm even doing any of this stuff is like, I wanted easier pathways to having a fulfilling life in this way. And so I don't want men to be shearing off and, you know, basically shearing off their sexual desire. From my experience, women want passionate men, right? How do we do that outside of this game of just pure objectifying sexual conquest? How do we like connect, like the energy that gets lodged in our cock and our brain and our stimuli with like an allyship, a heartful respect. And I really, to come from a place of like, I really want to create a joyful experience for me and for you. And, you know, what could that look like? what do you desire? How can we find a place that feels really joyful? And I don't want to make any move that feels like it's crossing you in a way that makes you uncomfortable or is, you know, out of integrity for yourself. So let's find that path. And, you know, for me to really be open and receptive to feedback, you know, recognizing consent is in the moment and we can always retract consent for a given activity. Being in that game of finding pleasure in ways that can feel really damn good in my body, walking away feeling like I got to have, you know, connection. I got to have closeness. I got to have pleasure. And I got to offer myself as a gift. And I want to like slow it down for a moment and say the story that I want to be part of changing for boys and for men is really going up against this kind of peace me too demonization of male sexuality. It's like, how can we embody behavior that is viewing our life force, our erotic charge, our desirous self from a place of reverence, from a place from like in the spirit of beauty? I want to offer myself as a gift. That is a very different story than what we're fed. And what does it look like, you know, as a boy moving into, you know, his adulthood, or men in their lives, you know, dating or in marriage or in a relationship? What does it mean to give myself as a gift, to give my touch as a gift to, you know? And I'm not one that just kind of like drifts off into the ethereal spiritual realm around sexuality. For me, it's like, what is the practical ways that I can offer, you know, myself honestly, trusting way, where we're both after like mutuality and reciprocity and pleasure, so that we can feel like we are carrying with us this spirit of beauty and reverence for, you know, and, you know, not just for ourselves, not just for our own pleasure, but actually for community. Like, how are we building trust in community and walking as an ally for the women, the sisters in our lives? Our pursuit, our personal pursuit is a political act. And how do we take responsibility for ourselves and how we're behaving both in private and personal space? I'm sorry, private and public spaces, around, you know, carrying our life force energy.
Elliot, I heard in there so many answers to the question that I'd been holding on to for a little bit, which is, what does that healthy relationship with our erotic energy look like? Right. And I think you shaped it in a lot of different ways. I heard ideas of just now responsibility, reverence, celebration, authenticity, and also, you know, not shying away from it, not running away from it, but actually channeling it in a way that's respectful, you know, as well. And in a dance, you know, I know you're in dance, but it's like in a dance with the people that you're coming into contact with. And I think that image, you know, is really powerful as a set of principles and a sort of a way of envisioning what that looks like. And I'd love to actually get into what you were alluding to, right? Which is, how do we get there? Right. And it sounded like the first step in all of that that I heard and what you were saying is being in touch with ourselves and understanding when that energy is present, what that energy wants, being able to articulate it, not just externally, but first to ourselves, right? Like, this is what's happening. This is what I'm feeling. This is, I guess, what my desire is around a particular situation or an interaction or a moment. And kind of, you know, felt to me like there's a whole set of things there, you know, between self-understanding, I imagine also self-regulation, you know, and then the piece that I feel like always challenges that, right? And bringing it specifically, because that I imagine is universal, but specifically bringing it to the male experience, I think the part that bastardizes that process, right, is the risk you were alluding to, right? Is the is the posturing, is the, you know, hey, if I go out and do this and I get, you know, if I get rejected, right, that shame resilience piece you're talking about earlier, oh, that's going to bring my entire world crashing down, right? And that fear is like very visceral, right? You know, going back to the embodiment there, like you feel tension, you feel fear, you're not able to, you know, we have all these images of the nervous guy, you know, on a TV show who's not even able to like speak, like make basic conversation or say words to an attractive female or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that is a very relatable experience, you know, at some stage of life for most men who, you know, cis hetero men, right? And it's like, yeah, like that's a lot to process. And so what I hear is an aspiration for what good looks like. And I guess my question then is, how do we build that self-awareness? How do we develop that ability to articulate and express what those desires are, and do so in a way that is recognizing the risk and the cultural pressures that might take us away from doing all of that in a healthy manner? What are the tools, I guess, that you work off of or recommend, or the practices, you know, that help people get towards that?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say that, you know, that is another leading question that I'm carrying. Like, how do I, you know, there's no one size fit all here, right? And men are going to have different natural capacities, natural attunement. You know, just to say, I think that, you know, there's studies that show that young boys are actually more emotional, or have more emotional attunement than, you know, again, I don't know, you know, I can't quote the study, but boys have emotionality, you know, boys are human. And, you know, to answer your question, there's, you know, are we talking about adults? Are we talking about boys? There's, you know, some of the, my goal is to be part of, you know, big collaborations and partnerships that are, this is a multi-generational process here, where we can grant spaces for boys right now. Now, I'm a father, I have a 4-year-old girl. You know, the work that I'm doing right now, you know, God willing, you know, by the time, you know, a decade from now, when she's, you know, heading off to high school, that there's going to be a different culture that she gets to be a part of, around, you know, eroticism and sexuality. That would be very fast. You know, how about 30 years, 40 years, 60 years from now, assuming we all make it there as a species, that there's a very different way that we are, you know, validating each other, and supporting the human authenticity, of each individual. So, you know, that being said, you know, there's really cool programs and education curriculum for, you know, starting young around, you know, self-autonomy of our bodies. You know, how can we get good with our yeses and nos with others, starting in grade school, moving into high school, really getting clear on ways that we can communicate consent and, you know, find those moments of reciprocity with partners. And for, you know, for the men listening here, I would say that there's, I guess I'll start here. You know, I want men to be able to take an honest look at the impact that they're having in their lives, you know, both on themselves. What is the self-talk? What are the stories that they're feeding? What are they kind of enacting out of, you know, where they feel insecure in themselves? You know, where are we holding shame in our bodies? Where are we holding confusion? Or, you know, where do we know we really went wrong in the past? And how do we make amends for those? Like, how do we clean up, you know, where we're starting from right now? You know, this past week, I was actually at the National Sexual Assault Conference, and I was consistently brought back to like those little moments in high school, in college, in my adult life, where I didn't show up well, I hurt someone. Or I, you know, my actions actually cast a stone of rippling harm through a community. I think that men can start there of like, how can I own what I know to be true? And I lied to you here. I crossed your boundary there. Let me create a space for an apology. Let me first see if this person's open for an apology. And if so, like, how can I really honor myself and this person by owning up, being responsible, and showing yourself and others of how you're going to prevent that kind of behavior moving forward. I think that, you know, simplest thing is, who are your closest guy friends that you can deepen into vulnerability with around your sexual life? You know, I'm in a marriage right now. I'm in an open marriage right now, and I'm a parent, and we co-parent our 4-year-old. There's a lot of moving pieces just in that, of how to be true to what I need, what I want, how to speak that, how to be in relationship with my wife around those pieces. So I would just say, like, take stock of where you're at right now, and how can we build more self-trust into our life right now? And what that's going to do for me is, I'm going to be able to respect myself more tomorrow after I have that conversation. And from that greater self-respect and honoring myself for the courage it took to own that, take responsibility for that action, I can make new choices. So, you know, that feels like a great starting point. I would also say, specifically around eroticism, you know, a lot of times, you know, both from exposure to porn, from the ways that, you know, we're kind of taught to be dogs on pursuit of sex, be available for sex whenever we want, supposed to perform a certain way, last as long as we can, that sex is entirely, you know, the sexual encounter ends when men orgasm. All of these things kind of shape our ideas of what it means to have a successful, fulfilling, erotic moment, right? There's work in unpacking those pieces. There's work in unpacking what capacity we have for pleasure in our bodies. But a lot of the attention that I have right now is like not around sex, not around flirting or dating. It's like one step back around what happens in our bodies when we get turned on. So a lot of times, I'll just be real honest, you know, the ways that I will masturbate in my life, it's rarely because I'm so turned on, I want to have sex, that I, you know, need to masturbate. I'm actually frustrated, or I'm anxious, or I just feel tense. Like, I have to do something that I don't want to do, and I'm annoyed about it. And so there's tension. It's like this tension release valve that oftentimes men turn to. There is other ways that men need to incorporate embodiment practices outside of self-pleasure, of how to self, like you said, self-regulate. That was actually the word I was looking for earlier. How do we self-regulate ourselves in other ways beyond ejaculation? You know, I could list off, you know, exercise and qigong and breath work and this and that. You know, I want to invite men to find the ways that they can build up practices of self-regulation. Some of that is relationships with other men. Some of that's just whoever's, if it's a family member, if it's a best friend, if it's a mentor, if it's your partner, ideally not leaning too heavily on your partner, but find those people that you can actually find self-regulation with. And you know, there's also, you know, sexual mastery practices like, you know, microcosmic orbit, where there's, you know, you're breathing and you're visualizing and you're squeezing PC muscles here, and, you know, basically moving energy out from your groin and, you know, enjoying the pleasure of kind of energetic movement through your body. You know, these are specific practices that, you know, men can look into and explore. But for me, it's a wider experience of of emotional self-regulation, of emotional self-regulation, physical embodiment, kind of all in the spirit of showing up aligned with ourselves, showing up in a way where we feel that we can respect ourselves and respect others, that we can be on purpose in our lives, that we can go after the things that are really important. And hopefully for me, that looks like humility. It looks like allyship. It looks like respect. It looks like service. And you know, service can look like whatever it is for you, like find that. I too often see men that are not seeking that, that are not in alignment with what service means for you. And I'll say that, you know, service is a way that for me, I can like find my groove of integrity and authenticity. And it feels really damn good to be in that space, to be in that spot. And, you know, and I can't tell anyone what their service is in this life, but, you know, part of that comes from, I'm going to be responsible for my erotic charge, for my erotic fulfillment, and build the tools around me, both the communication and the emotion, but also the humans that love me, that want to uplift me, and that are there to hold me accountable and question me and mirror back to me my behavior so that I can make amends when I need to and stay true to myself along the path.
I think we've been successful in going a layer deeper today. There are so many layers, right? So, I mean, things you just mentioned there at the end, Elliot, of like, I'm like, okay, well, right. We should just do like a whole nother episode just on a lot of those things. And, you know, and I think that's always going to be the case because whether it's, you know, around a range of different topics we talk about on this show, but there's always going to be more to go into. And so we have run out of time for today. But what I guess I would like to invite folks listening to this, if you've joined us this far, is to really be thinking for a moment now of just where is the application for this in your own life? Elliot shared a bunch of different things. You can go back and listen again. You know, there was layers there that were shared of specific tools, specific things that you can do, especially if you are a man and considering this conversation. I want to put it out again, to reach out to us. We're always available here at live@wovenwings.net. You can reach out to us. Let us know how this conversation is moving inside you. We'll do what we can to continue that conversation for you, help you get connected with communities or people in your area that might be doing similar work. And then broader than that, whether you're a man or not, listening to this conversation, I just really want to invite you to think about less in a broad strokes or this technique, or I can use this thing, but who's someone that comes to your mind right now that needs to hear this conversation? Who's someone that you can take that extra moment to just check in with and see how they're doing and reach that hand out to make a connection? You know, these stories that Elliot's leading us through, you know, the change process around, they run very, very deep. And so, you know, there's no one out there, none of us part of this conversation, are unable to find someone right around us and ourselves first and foremost that are affected by the dynamics that we've explored today. So, yeah, how can grace, how can love make a difference in your life and the lives of the people around you today? Elliot, thank you again so much for joining us today. It's been really a pleasure having you on the show. And as we often say with our guests, you know, I really think that there could be plenty more. So so consider the possibility of joining us again. I hope you will.
So it's a treat. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Again, please leave us a review. You can follow along by joining our newsletter. More information about Elliot is shared in our show description if you want to get connected more with the work that he is doing. And again, thank you so much for joining us for another episode, and we will see you next time. Aloha and take care.